And I do, I think. We are glad to see you. I hope the week is going well for you. And I hope tonight will be some encouragement to each one of us, as it has been to me and working on it. We're doing a series right now on the theme from Hebrews 12, actually, that we may share his holiness. That's from Hebrews 12 and verse 10. The 12th chapter of Hebrews brings this idea up, really, I think, in at least three occasions in the rest of the chapter. And the reason I mention that is to say that this is a theme which, in its original setting and the way we mean it now, is intended to be a strong encouragement and a motivation for us in our spiritual lives that adds depth and also staying power, maybe fruitfulness as well. This is our fourth study in this series. In the first one, we tried to show the ways in which the presence of holiness has the transforming power in Scripture. And we looked at a bunch of different occasions where that's illustrated. Then we tried to show the claim that's made that God is holy, what that means, what goes into that. And then we tried to illustrate that it's the holiness of God which is responsible for the entire scheme of redemption. That was the focus of our thought last week. And tonight we're thinking about, all right, now, what does it mean to have a reverence for or toward that which is holy, a respect for that which is holy? You could say, and I think and be right about it, a lot of the really impressive episodes or the events that occur in the Bible that otherwise seem puzzling to us are meaningful when they're examined as if they are providing an education in respect for that which is holy. And I want to try to illustrate that point tonight. Let me start with something actually Ruth mentioned in our study last week. And the principle, long toward the end of our class, this was brought up, but the principle that which is holy has to be treated as if it were holy. When we talk about something that's holy being hallowed or kept holy, this is the idea that's meant. And Ruth mentioned the episode when Moses took the rod and his staff, and instead of speaking to the rock, remember what he did? He struck it twice, which would seem to us as if that were such a small deal, so understandable when a guy was as frustrated as Moses was. But if you look back at the way God applied it, the problem is that the only way water could come from rock is through the glory of God. And if water was sought from the rock, and if God's holiness were not recognized, then instead of a blessing occurring, a transgression would have occurred. God would have been misrepresented. And in this way, I want to maybe ask you to kind of get ready for our class this way. In Numbers chapter 20, we won't read all of the verses of this chapter, but it starts out, like so many other episodes in the Old Testament, with the griping of Israel, the complaining. We wish we were back in Egypt instead of in this evil place. It's no place for vines or figs or pomegranates. There's no water to drink. And Moses and Aaron, verse 6 says, went from the presence of the assembly to the entrance of the tent of the meeting and fell on their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And that's when the Lord tells Moses to take the staff, and this is important now, to assemble the congregation. The people are going, these complaining, faithless people are going to need to be present. And take Aaron and then tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water. This is Numbers 20 and verse 8. And so you shall bring water out of the rock for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle. So Moses takes the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. From before the Lord is also important here. From the presence of the glory of God where he's fallen on his face, and they gather the assembly before the rock, verse 10, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of the rock?" What problem do you see emerging? We, all right. I think there might be a problem emerging right there. And Moses lifts up his hand, and he struck the rock with his staff twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank and their livestock. God gave the water. I mean, the rock didn't give its water because Moses hit it so hard. And it wasn't Moses and Aaron who did it. But that's the problem. Here in verse 12, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy." Now, the King James says to sanctify me. But that's what it means, to hallow my name, to respect my holiness, in keeping with our lesson here, in the eyes of the people of Israel. "Therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them." And this is the place where it's the waters of Meribah, the waters of murmuring or quarreling, where the people quarreled with the Lord, and through them, he showed himself, what? Holy. Now, God showed himself holy to a people who did not believe in his holiness. And the problem is that Moses failed to respect God's holiness in a way that the people could see. Now, the years go by, if you remember, here they are camped finally just on the west, on the east side of the area of the Jordan, getting ready after these 39 years to go over into the promised land, and Moses wants to go. And he mentions in Deuteronomy 1, he mentions again in Deuteronomy 3, I think in Deuteronomy 3, verse 25, 26, along in there, God just tells him, "That's enough from you. You can't go because of, you can go to Pisgah and you can look over and see, but you can't go." And then at the end of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy 32, in verses 50 and 51, this point is made it's spelled out for us again in this as Moses blesses the people and surveys the ways God has blessed them. He says that God has told him that this is, "I'm giving the people the land for possession. You die on the mountain which you go up, and be gathered to your people," verse 50, "as Aaron your brother died at Mount Hor and was gathered to his people." Verse 51, "because you broke faith with me in the midst of the people of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin, and because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the people of Israel. All right, now, what looks to us like it was a small offense, most of us would look at it that way, is a larger offense because it violates the very principle which the event was all about. Meribah Kadesh, Kadesh means holy. The holy place where the quarreling of Israel should have been resolved, and Moses failed in that situation to recognize or to show God to be holy in the presence or in the midst of the people of Israel. So that kind of gets us to thinking, hopefully. And it illustrates the idea that we kind of need to have in our mind as we move ahead these next few weeks. And that is that since God is holy, then those things which belong to Him or are associated with Him are to be regarded as holy as well. That which God makes holy or which He owns for Himself then is to be respected. And you can think of what some of those things are. I ran across many years ago three little principles about the holiness or about the things that are holy. And these are based on Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy especially. But then in the New Testament, 1 Peter 2, 1 Corinthians 3, passages like that also. The book of Exodus especially speaks of certain, I'd say things or objects as being holy. Now think of what we're saying. We start with the holiness of God, and now we come to, in Exodus we read about there's holy ground. Where was the holy ground? All right, before the burning bush, remember Exodus chapter 3? There's a holy day, Sabbath day, for example, was holy. There's a holy food, there's holy oil, there's a holy crown mentioned in Exodus 39 and verse 40. These which are otherwise just things. Food, clothes, day, a plot of dirt, what makes them holy? The presence of God, or their belonging to God, or the fact that He set them apart for a special purpose or a special use, you see. Now, this will be important when we get to thinking in a few weeks about me being holy. Are you being holy? Just plain old me or you, how could that be? Well, if God sets us apart to be for special purposes, to be His, then that's the idea. And then that which is different because it belongs to God is said to be holy. At the end of Leviticus chapter 11, it talks about making the distinction between the clean and the unclean, or the difference between the holy and the common. That principle is real. What belongs to God is different because it belongs to God, or because He makes use of it. And then what is dedicated to God will need to be regarded as different because it is holy. And then what is, I'll use the word disciplined for purposes of where we're headed in our study here, but God is jealous over what is holy to Himself. And therefore, when the holiness of that which belongs to him is not regarded by people, then God acts in protection of what belongs to him or what is his. What Adam was talking about is a good way to illustrate this idea. In Exodus 19, verses 5 and 6, God says to Israel there before the mountain, I've brought you out. Now if you'll hear my word, if you'll keep my covenant, then you'll be my treasured possession. You'll be my people out of all the peoples of the earth. You'll be a holy nation. Holy meant people dedicated to God and different because they were and disciplined by their obligation to his covenant or his word. All right, now, time goes by, and the faithlessness of the people during the times of the judges and then under the various kings and in the presence of the mighty prophets who preached to them, it goes by until finally God brings the invaders and he leaves the people open. And then when the northern kingdom falls, in 2 Corinthians 17, the writer gives the whole reason for it. I start at verse 13. That'll give us a bigger picture here. Talks about the idolatry of the people and how they served these idols, and the Lord said to them, you shall not do this. Verse 13 now, 2 Kings 17. Yet the Lord warned Israel and Judah by every prophet and every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes in accordance with the law that I commanded your fathers and that I sent you by my servants the prophets. But they would not listen, but were stubborn as their fathers had been, who did not believe in the Lord their God. Now listen, verse 15. They despised his statutes and his covenant that he made with their fathers and the warnings that he gave them. They went after false idols and became false, and they followed what? The nations that were around them, concerning whom the Lord had commanded them that they should not do like them. Now, why had God commanded Israel to not do like these nations? Because they were a holy nation. And their refusing to be dedicated to God and being like the nations brought upon them the discipline of exile at the hand of the Assyrians. That's an illustration of what we're getting at, aren't we, Joe? All right, it was 2 Kings 17, verses 13 through 15, and especially verse 15. Okay. Anyone else? Question or comment or idea? Okay. All right, now, here's what I'd like to get at, and I've got some great stories in just a few minutes, so forgive me for that. But I want to try then to illustrate this third principle. What we've said is what's holy needs to be treated as holy, and since God is holy, what belongs to him is holy and should therefore be treated that way. And that is the lesson. There are some remarkable events in Scripture, many of them written in the times before this, in Old Testament times, but some of them in the New Testament as well, that seem so odd to us. I think to modern America they seem odd. We can't figure why these kinds of stories are in a book that talks to us about the love of God. And what really we have is an education in what it means to respect that which is holy. And it's a very important principle. And I'll just say that a lot of times, if you find events or actions, especially in the Old Testament, that seem you don't comprehend, that just seem strange, if you'll just chalk it up, this is dealing with idolatry and it's upholding holiness, that will be true almost every time. And I'll give you some examples of this. Let's start in Leviticus 10, a story you remember. This is a story involving two of the four sons of Aaron. And the tabernacle has been constructed and set up and the priesthood initiated and all the regulations of drawing near to God have been spelled out and made clear by this time. But now Nadab and Abihu come and they each took their censers, which they used to take from the fire of the altar then to burn incense that represented prayer to God and so forth. So what did they do? They offered that which they had no authority to offer. It was not from the altar as it should have been. It was by their own wills and not by the will of or the instruction of God. And English Standard Version translates the word strange, unauthorized, I think accurately, fire before the Lord. Now, when they did that, fire came down from before the Lord and consumed them. Verse 2. And then there's the explanation, verse 3. Moses said to Aaron, "This is what the Lord has said. Among those who are near me, I will be sanctified." And sanctified means what? Pardon?
Set apart
or regarded as holy, treated as holy. And before all the people, I'll be glorified. And Aaron holds his peace and Moses has them to carry these two from the out of the camp, and then he further has Aaron and Eleazar and Ithamar, the others, to not show any outward action of mourning over this, because this was the proper thing to happen when the holiness of God had been disregarded. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. You think about this. How had the holiness of God been disregarded? Now, don't just say with strange fire. What's the underlying principle? In what way had the holiness of God been disregarded? All right. I think you are. Do you agree with? They said by doing what they wanted instead of doing what God said. What I'm getting at, they tried to offer to God something by their own will and intention and not by God's will. That's another way of saying they disrespected the holiness of God by offering something as worship which was not in keeping with what God taught them. All right, now, you and I think to ourselves, well, we don't offer fire from the altar and we couldn't offer strange fire. But folks, wouldn't the same principle be appropriate? Shouldn't we regard God as holy in terms of offering to Him what He asks of us? And this is one of the cases you see. In Numbers 15, there's the episode where the man is out gathering sticks on the Sabbath day, and he's found to be doing so. And the question comes up of what's to be done with this man, or with regard to this man. And he's taken and stoned because of what seems terrible, doesn't it? You stone a man because he was picking up sticks? That's the way most of us would look at it. But if you look back at Leviticus 24 and verses 14 through 16, you'll notice, and I don't think I have this up here, but this explains the point, I think. Leviticus 24 and verses 14 through 16, it's not the picking up sticks that's the issue. It is instead the fact that, let me see if I got the right. This shows the idea of stoning in the sense of blaspheming, but 24 and 12, is it? It's where the idea of stoning comes from. The idea about the Sabbath day was that the Sabbath was to be, they weren't to do this kind of work on the Sabbath day because the Sabbath was holy to them, because it represented God's covenant with them as a holy people. And this man was disregarding or was transgressing that fact altogether, something which he was forbidden to do. That's a short story. You need to look at it a little further. Number 16, the story of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram and their rebellion against the leadership of Moses and Aaron. In this case, they were rebelling against God, who spoke through them and not through them. But what happens is they come out, they're sons of the Levites too, and they have gone through the crowd and gotten together 250 chiefs of the congregation, verse 2 says, and they assembled them against Moses and Aaron, and they said, "You've gone too far for all in the congregation," look at this, "are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" When Moses heard it, he fell on his face, and he said to Korah and all his company, "In the morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to him. The one whom he chooses, he will bring near to him." And he tells them to take their censers and to bring fire and so forth before the Lord tomorrow, and the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the holy one. In what sense were Moses and Aaron holy in a way that was different from the way the whole nation was holy? They were a holy nation. At first, Aaron had been given a task specifically. He was high priest. All right, that's right. God set him apart for a special service, and in that way, he was holy. What about Moses? All right, God sent him to do a specific task. He was the one that God chose through whom he would give the law and so forth. So he was holy in that sense. Well, this story goes ahead to show how the next morning they gather out there, and Moses and Aaron say, verse 20, "Separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them." The Lord says this to them. They fall on their faces. They say, "Oh God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be angry with all the congregation?" The Lord spoke to Moses, "Say to the congregation, get away from the dwelling of Korah and Dathan and Abiram." That's another way of saying, be holy from the camp of Korah and Dathan and Abiram. Separate yourselves in that way. Well, you remember what happened to them?
The ground opened up and then swallowed them.
All right. And their censers were taken. Their censers became holy then and were beaten out and used for a covering for the altar. It became holy in that way. But the idea, you look at this, God demonstrated the concept of holiness to the people in this way. Everyone else gets around, gets away from them, and then the earth opens its mouth and swallows them and their households and all their goods and all of that. And they perish in the midst of the assembly, verse 33 said, and the people cried out and fled. And again, the idea, remember, this is all about who does the Lord choose to be holy? That was the whole question. Once God has set somebody apart for the special task or the special service, then it wasn't up to a vote after that. It was not to be disregarded in that way. That work was to be honored and respected. All right, remember the story of Achan. Joshua chapter 6. They've taken the city of Jericho, and God had said ahead of time that the inhabitants of that evil city, except for Rahab, were devoted to destruction. Verse 17 of chapter 6. And this is another way of saying they're to be holy. This is the way God set them apart. And then verse 18, with all these devoted things, they were not to take any of them, anything that was a thing for destruction, and bring trouble on themselves in that way. Verse 19, all the silver and gold and every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord. Now what did Achan do? All right, he saw in all that stuff a goodly Babylonian garment and other some silver or gold or whatever, and he took it and he hid it underneath the blankets or whatever in his tent. All right, how did that get discovered? All right, they went to the little, after conquering this big city of Jericho, they went off to the little old town of Ai, and they got completely defeated and run out of town because they had transgressed God's holiness and God wasn't with them. And in chapter 7 now, in verses 4 through 6, it shows the agony of Joshua over all of this and his asking what had happened. And then God speaks to them in verses 10 and 11. He says, it's because Israel has sinned. They've transgressed my covenant that I commanded them. They've taken some of the devoted things, some of the holy things. They've stolen and lied and put them among their own belongings. And then Achan is found out to be the perpetrator of this deed. They remove these devoted things, these holy things from their midst by putting Achan to death according to the decree of God, the judgment of God. I won't have time to do all of this next one. I'm just going to tell you the story. This one has to do with Eli's boys. These two young men, whose names are Hophni and Phinehas. In 1 Samuel 2, verses 16 and 17, they're supposed to be serving as priests But they have absolutely no regard for God's holiness. And it's so bad that they take of the sacrifices, they commit immorality with women at the door of the tent where the service was supposed to be taking place. This goes on even though Eli gives them a feeble warning, until God tells Eli they're both going to die in one day. Now the surprise about this is that this is brought about through these young men's further disregard of holiness. What happens is the Israelites get in a little battle with some of the Philistines, and they decide it'd be a good thing if we take the Ark of the Covenant from the tabernacle and carry it out here to the battle like it's a good luck charm. And who are the guys who bring it out here? Eli's two boys, Hophni and Phinehas. And they lose their lives in that process. And then the Philistines take the Ark of the Covenant to the temple of their god Dagon. And what happens? All right, Dagon falls over, busts himself apart on the entry to the through the door there. They send the ark back toward Israel, and they come to a place called Beth Shemesh. Do I have it right? Beth Shemesh. All right. In chapter 6 and verses 19 and 20, some of the residents of that place lose their lives by looking upon the ark as if it were a charm of some sort. In other words, through this whole period of time, it's being underlined, emphasized, exclamation points being put with it here. You don't treat God's holiness as if it's common, and you don't take holy things and do what you want to with them to satisfy your curiosity. You respect them, that idea. 1 Chronicles 13, verses 5 and following, time has passed now. All this time, the ark has just been left at somebody's place over there. David consolidates his power, has been blessed by God, decides it'd be good to bring the ark back to Jerusalem. And he sends out there, and they put the ark onto an ox cart and haul it toward town. And they get along the way somewhere, and they hit a rough spot in the road, and the ark is about to slip off of the cart, and Uzzah does what? He reaches out there to steady the ark. Now, that's a good thing, right? Why wasn't it? What happened to Uzzah? All right. He dies. He's consumed because of that. And David is angry over it. It doesn't look fair. We were just moving the ark and so forth. They leave it at the house of Obed-Edom for a while. And guess what? God blesses that man. He prospers. And they perceive it's because the ark is there. And David decides what was wrong is that we didn't move it according to the commandment. How was the ark supposed to be moved? All right. On whose shoulders? The priest. By what means? All right. The poles through the rings. And David sends the priest out there with poles, and they carry it the right way and move it to town, and there's a great deal of celebration over it. Acts 5. Ananias and Sapphira. The church has now been established, and people are doing wonderfully generous things, unbidden, uncommanded. It's not demanded of them, but they're selling their property and bringing stuff and bringing the money. Barnabas does and lays it at the apostles' feet, and Ananias and Sapphira decide, you know, that's quite an honor. So they sell their property, which is fine, They bring the money and they give part of it to the apostles, which is all they had every right to do. The only thing is what? How'd they lie? They said they gave it all. Now, why would you do that? All right, to look big in the eyes of man. But in the process, how do you have to treat God? As if he doesn't know. So Ananias, remember, comes before him. Did you, you know, Peter asked him how it came into their mind to lie to the Holy Spirit like this. And he falls down dead, and they carry him out, and his wife Sapphira comes in. They ask her, say, yeah, we gave it all like that, which means they had conspired together to do this. Peter tells her that she's not lied to men but to God, and she falls over as well. Now, what's the point of all of these? I've given you seven of them here, these stories. What do they have in common? All right, the violating of God's will, but the idea that which is holy is to be respected and treated as holy. Bill? 2 Timothy 2:15 is important though, because holy things are to be kept holy, to be respected as holy. Now, what kind of an admonition does this place before us? I would jot down Hebrews 12:28. With reverence and awe, offer grateful worship to God. What encouragement does this offer to us? I mean, think of it this way. If God has this kind of jealousy over that which is holy, and you and I are holy, what does that mean he would do for us? Let me read it another way, from 1 Corinthians 3:16-17. Do you not know that you, the church, are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy him. For God's temple is holy, and you are that temple. What kind of encouragement is that? The bell rung. I'm trying to get somebody to say that God expects those who belong to him to be treated with respect. He has a jealous care over that which he has made holy, and his people are that in the world today. And that's an important thing for us to remember. I've kept you. Appreciate your patience tonight. We covered a lot of territory and a lot of stories that have thought-provoking things about them. I appreciate you bearing with me. I wanted to try to have them all before you at one time, and I hope it'll help us think about it. Let's pray before we go tonight.